Hi, I'm Doug Keck, and welcome to The Catholic Sphere. You know, each week we tackle topics important to Catholics around the globe with a different host and a different focus. This week, our subject is theology, the topic negotiating the non-negotiables. Today, we're joined by our panel, led by EWTN TV and radio host, the ubiquitous Father Mitch Pacwa from his set. He's joining us right here in Irondale, Alabama. We also have EWTN's Vice President of Theology, Colin Donovan, my partner on this program. He's always with us. He's in our theology studio. And finally, joined by my buddy from the West Coast, the Magis Center's one and only host of Father Spitzer's Universe, the one and only Father Spitzer. And he joins us from our luxurious studios in Orange County, California. Always glad to see all three of you. Now, we were together not too long ago kind of talking about the whole idea of politics and the Catholic Church. Are they complementary? Are they opposed to each other? And we kind of talked about that, Colin, in the last program. This one, we're talking about certain things that are negotiable and things that are non-negotiable. Why don't you explain what we mean by the Catholic non-negotiables when it comes to voting in politics?
Well, the non-negotiables, for example, are in three areas which Pope Benedict enunciated. And you can find it also every election cycle. The Bishops' Conference puts out its Forming Consciences for Faithful Citizenship, in which they re-enunciate the basic principles and also address things which are the most important in the particular day. Mm-hmm. And in the latest document has been put out and which can be found on their website, is once again that life is the preeminent issue. At the end of the last show, Father Spitzer made a point which I thought was remarkable. I'd never heard this before. And that is that in Suarez, in discussing what were the basic and essential things necessary, also talked about discerning which is the most important. And the one which is most prior is the most important to the other rights, the other principles. And the most prior is life. If you don't have life, you can't have good health, you can't have a job, you can't have many things in this world, and you can't have anything. And so the Church is very concerned about the dignity of human life from conception to natural death, and that encompasses many things. That encompasses especially direct assaults on life, as in abortion, euthanasia, and other practices such as in vitro fertilization, where many die that one may live, and you go down through those things. And then there are those things which, if you're not treating individuals well, you're not treating them as a human being, obviously those are assaults on the dignity of a living person. So you can put those into two categories, one which is essential and one which is essential as well because of the first, but is you can then have discussions about, well, how do I provide these benefits of life to individuals? And those are the negotiable things. Mm-hmm. We can't have a perfect economy. The perfect economy is the economy of salvation, and that will be achieved in eternal life. That's the only perfect economy. We won't have one on earth. Most of our political battles are over the two extremes of that. Absolutely free kinds of capitalism and absolutely controlled kinds of economic systems, socialism, communism. So there can be debates mm-hmm. about how to achieve that a good economy that are reasonable and don't mm-hmm. go to the extremes, which Aquinas would call vice. And that's what political debates are about when we talk about policy issues or negotiable issues. But always we have to start with mm-hmm. the non-negotiables. Life is non-negotiable. Natural marriage and family life, that's a non-negotiable. We have other forms of union in society today, which ultimately will lead to the failure of this principal cell in society. Mm-hmm. And then finally, the freedom that is necessary to raise your children, which also can be found in our political freedoms, to speak freely and debate freely about the topics and the issues. When that's taken away, then obviously that's an offense against that. Mm-hmm. So in this show, with the negotiables, we're dealing with how do we make reference to the non-negotiables mm-hmm. in discerning what policies will have the greatest effect at producing the common good in the society and in the time in which we exist.
So, Father Spitzer, Isn't it the church's job really to affect hearts so that people will naturally do the right thing rather than being involved with policies?
Well, in a way, you can say that the church does try to guide principles, but the church also tries to make a prudential decision on, particular policies that they deem will promote the various social principles. So we have the principle of the universal destination of goods, the principle of subsidiarity, the principle of solidarity, the principle of the common good, the principle of democracy. But the church doesn't just have social analysis principles or economic principles, because the difficulty with those principles is that human beings get reduced to units of economic analysis, units of social analysis, and the church never succumbed to that. It's the first two principles, if you look at our wonderful social documents, Catholic social teaching, CST, if you look at it carefully and you look at the application areas, the first two application areas are the individual, him or herself, and secondly, the family, as Colin was just intimating. In other words, the Catholic Church always said, what's the real substance here? The real substance is not economic units and social units. That's important in the long run, but let's start with what really matters. Oh, the substance is that individual intrinsic dignity, that little eternity, that intrinsic dignity in themselves with inalienable rights, that human individual, that's the starting point. And it's always been the starting point since, Rerum Novarum, when Pope Leo the 13th came out and gave us our first social encyclical. But then the second principle is the family. The family, of course, that's the social substance. That's not just economics. That's not just social. It's literally the substance out of which love is born and faith is born. This is, the emotional life, the values, the morality of the person. And it's not just because of that. It is that love of the family is so concrete. It's so much a part of the creation, of human beings and the reality of the soul. And of course, for Jesus, the key principle, that the family has that embedded in it, produces it in a way that no society can do. So the whole idea of Plato coming along and saying, well, just give those kids to the guardians. They're really smart. They can do a better job than the parents. Of course, we looking at it from the vantage point of Christian principles, well, the state has no love in it. That's not what it does. Right. The state has no faith in it. That's not what it is doing, right? It's trying to, get to these principles of common order and law and various other kinds of social goods that are there. But, if you don't start with those first two, the dignity, the intrinsic dignity of the individual, and, of course, the inviolability of the family as the building blocks from which all other social analysis, indeed society itself, comes from, then, of course, the whole thing's going to go wackadoodle. Ever wonder why in the whole of Marxist analysis you can't find the word rights anywhere? It doesn't surprise me. Mm-hmm. He started with economic analysis. He drifted into social analysis, but he never got to the intrinsic dignity, the inalienable rights of every single human being. He just had no sense of soul, no sense of transcendent dignity, and so no sense as a consequence of intrinsic dignity.
And he lost out. Right. And it's amazing in our society how many people think that, contrary to what Pope Benedict said, who said to neglect the minimal contributions of the Christian tradition is to threaten democracy itself, whose strength depends upon the values it promotes. As Father Spitzer was just saying, without those values, you pull those out from a Christian perspective, what are you basing your values on, Father Mitch? And we're also dealing in an environment, too, where I always think about, let's say we talked in the last program about some of the black churches and being, let's say, more upfront politically, historically, but yet you're also dealing many times there with, where the black population is the one that's most negatively impacted by abortion, but they tend to support the candidates who tend to support that.
Yeah, well, this is, I think there's a change going on. One of the things going that's taking place is the same process that occurred after the Reconstruction period, after the Civil War, that the political party that fought for an end to slavery, the Republicans, took the black vote for granted. And the party that had been the party of slavery changed. Hmm. They had a lot of changes in that regard. And by the 1930s, due to the neglect of one party, the Democrat Party won the African American vote. Well, now you see that the Democrat Party takes them for granted without really helping enough to benefit the black community, and they're drifting again because they certainly recognize they're being taken for granted. And when you don't have clear principle in either the politicians or in the voters, then you have these shifts of benefits. What benefits do I get? And whether from the politician, what benefits am I getting from the constituents, or from the constituents, what benefit am I getting from the politicians? And they move away, and this is a serious factor in the United States, where too few Americans know civics well enough to understand how the government even operates, yet alone the civil virtues and the civic virtues that should guide the way we act and guide our politics. Then what you're left with is, what do I get? And what's in it for me and my own? And, you know, I have plenty of contact locally with folks in the mostly non-Catholic churches. Mm-hmm. And what happens when these politicians come into a church, the church or the minister, not unusually at all, will get tens of thousands of dollars, depending on what level of office is coming to speak at his or her church. Mm-hmm. If it's, you know, even, you know, like a governor candidate, that's worth a good 25 grand. Mm-hmm. And there's a sliding scale here. I don't know what they're getting for presidential visits. Right. But the principle becomes not the protection of my people. In fact, right, in conversations with ministers, they are shocked when I tell them that, you know, 85% of the African American children conceived in New York City, and I believe also in Washington, D.C., mm-hmm, 85% of those black children conceived get aborted. It's 60% of all children in those two cities are aborted, mm-hmm, but it's 85% of all black kids. And instead of constantly doing the work to see what is actually happening and then paying attention to principles from the very Bible that their churches love, namely, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not bear false witness, thou shalt not steal. Basic principles we should be able to accept.
Well, let me ask you a question.
We don't see with that, that being applied.
Because to be fair to everybody, sometimes people look and they say, let's say in general, that once any organization starts taking money from let's say a government or some other agency, you can't help but become somewhat greater in your responsiveness to their wishes. Yep. And sometimes people have seen that with groups, let's say, who do great work, Catholic charities or other Catholic organizations who themselves get a substantial amount of money from from the government. And some people are concerned at times that there can be a lot of concern over, we need this big government situation and we need to support those who are into big government because that's where the largesse comes to do the wonderful work we do. The work's terrific. We're helping all these people. But that also can play a role, can it, Father Spitzer?
Yeah, no, I would have to say that you're right on the marker, and I think the whole idea of gratuities and lobbying and a variety of other kinds of things can, on both sides, government officials who receive these kinds of grants, or, you know, a Catholic charity, not just the organization, but Catholic organizations that receive these kinds of grants, you know, can obviously be very tempted by governmental largesse, but of course it's not largesse. It always comes at a cost, and we have to be very, very careful, you know, not to allow, you know, these kinds of links to be attached or some kind of connection, you know, that if we give you this, then in the end you're going to have to subscribe to something that you would consider immoral. And I have seen this happen again and again, where people are pressurized to become more pluralistic, but more pluralistic means that you're going to wind up denying your own values, including non-negotiables. So I agree we have to be exceedingly careful about where we take money from, the conditions under which we take such funds from a governmental agency. It is always much better to go after or to even to solicit funds from people who really do have your values, your best interests in mind, and subscribe in some sense to your morality, or if they don't, will not force you to undermine your own morality. And I think this is just has to be one of the ways in which we establish, as it were, a principle under which we accept government funding. Otherwise, I think the government will actually become a moral enforcer, and, you know, or I should say even a moral underminer, you know, by sheer, you know, pluralistic imposition.
Or definer of morality. As the government sees it. Well, Colin, you would know, and Father Mitch as well, we would know that obviously great insights from Mother Angelica was always relying on the average person in the pew for the support of EWTN because they felt that they were being fed by this network and in that way always keeping things in sync. And Mother would never take money from anybody who was asking us to do anything that wasn't totally in line with what we would have done anyway, and would turn things away if it didn't fit our profile and what she saw our mission to be. Now, Colin, we're also dealing in a situation you mentioned about marriage and things like that. Well, we're talking recently even in the church about you know, blessings and couple blessings, but we're not saying it's okay, but in extreme situations. And so in some ways, that there's a little bit of this kind of negotiating going on there, too. Where's the acceptance? What does a blessing mean? And things like that. And even the idea that one can accompany someone. What is accompanying it when we're dealing with, let's say, abortion and things like that? Or things that, like euthanasia. Obviously, those are pretty straightforward. But gay marriage, those kinds of things where there's a sense, well, maybe we need to be a little more open and understanding, and over a period of time, people get the right idea. So if I'm open to supporting it now, that's I'm really doing the right thing.
Yeah, and that those situations come up especially in connection with abortion. You know, family members feel like, well, I have to drive her to the abortion clinic, or I have to support her as she makes this difficult decision. No, you do not. In so many areas of life, people ask us today to respect their decisions of conscience, but they're not really allowing us to have our decisions of conscience. Now, there are ways that, and this came up obviously in the context of COVID or in vaccinations in general, with remote material cooperation in something. This is an important value. We were talking a little bit earlier about proportionality in that. This is a case where you can look at a situation, you can say, okay, is there is there a causal connection between what I want to do and the evil that may in some way be associated with it? Now, everything we do in life is bound up in evil. I'll guarantee you that. You can't go to the store, buy a product which some company has made where they're not advancing things contrary to the faith, contrary to the common good, contrary to the natural law or whatever. So there's always the question of material cooperation and evil. The centurion faced this, and the advice of our Lord was to be moral himself and not to do the things that were immoral. Well, and this is basically the decision that the voter has to make as well. One obviously faces an individual who has opinions about how this society ought to be ordered. First of all, you want to find somebody who has the opinions closest to your own, because obviously you want to see your values implemented in society. But you also have to consider that no politician, whether it's local, state, or federal, is himself the agent of change in governmental policy. It is, typically speaking, the parties. So the position of parties is an important consideration in that any politician, I like him, he's a good man, he will do good, but if the party that is expecting him to vote their way is going to do evil, then the serious question is, am I not a more formal cooperator in the evil that they do by electing this individual? So this question of moral cooperation in evil is a very serious one, and important one. And on our website, EWTN's website, we have a voting section in the question and answer area. I'm expecting it'll have a little bit more prominence as we get closer to the voting. Right. And in there you will find these issues of moral cooperation, prudence, many of the things that Father Mitch and Father Spitzer and I have talked about today. And you can see what the church actually says and how you should evaluate things.
Right. Well, let me ask, move over to Father Mitch on this with the idea. One of the things that's changed, obviously, is with the decision to put basically Roe v. Wade's away, put the abortion issue back to the states to let the states vote on it. Now, so far, it hasn't gone that well in a lot of, you know, these elections. And a lot of people feel now that, well, you know, the same idea. Well, people are voting for it. I guess that's what they want. And I don't want to impose people, as we've heard for years, my own Catholic perspective on it. So I don't want to necessarily vote against people just on the abortion issue. But I wonder now, and we talk about cooperation, that with it going to the states and people voting directly, let's say, for an amendment or something to the local state constitution, are you being that much more direct in your involvement in abortion than you were before, maybe, when Roe v. Wade was the law of the land?
Oh, well, there certainly is a greater involvement when when the decision to permit abortion, and remember, this is not only the fact that it is taking the life of an innocent person. No crime was committed by this person. And in many of the states where they allow abortion and vote for it, they do not allow the death penalty for those who are convicted of serious crimes. But they will convict an unborn child who is innocent of any crime to be killed. This is a very dangerous position. And not only is it the killing of an innocent person, but it is a tortured kind of death that if you did allow the execution of criminals, you would never do to a criminal what you do to a child in the womb, namely being dismembered while still alive. So that's what's going on. And you sound so terrible to say that. Well, we have to understand the reality of the fact. Just like in the 1800s, the American people had to understand the reality of the evil of taking away people's freedom and selling them as property. This was not a benign situation where everybody's happy singing, playing banjos on the plantation. This was an awful thing, filled with all kind of, in many cases, torment, whippings, etc., as well as the inherent indignity of losing freedom. And we have to have a clear sense in our mind, not that, well, the times are changing, we can allow this. If it's wrong to take the life of the innocent, it's wrong at every stage of existence. And the acceptability of it at this point is, by certain parts of society, is not right. Permission to do that. Clarity about the principle at stake and an energy to say that I would not do to a stray kitten what people are willing to do to a fetus. And that just, and this is a principle to help people understand. It's very interesting how those who torture animals when they're young are more likely to become violent persons and violent criminals later in life. If a society allows cruelty and death to the innocent in the womb, why are we surprised that there is more murder and viciousness on streets to people who are older? You gave permission to kill the innocent. Right. Well, on what basis do you say that it's wrong, except that they're older? Right. And as one of the local politicians said in my hearing, said, look, you either kill them in the womb or they'll kill each other later, so get it done early. Right. That's not a principle. Of morality, and we have to have clear principles.
That's not a good public policy, obviously. No. We are just out of time. Thank you once again for Father Mitch Pakwer joining us, along with Colin Donovan, and of course, Father Robert Spitzer, talking about negotiating the non-negotiables. And of course, for all of you, we thank you for joining us each week. Don't forget to join us next time when the host will be here on the Catholic Sphere, Ryan Penny. I'm Doug Keck. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.